Im Jahr 2020 wäre Ludwig van Beethoven 250 Jahre alt geworden. Das nehmen 12 Künstler zum Anlass, sich im Rahmen des Projekts Be Beethoven von Podium Esslingen 3 Jahre lang ausgiebig mit den zentralen Zukunftsthemen der Kunstmusik auseinanderzusetzen. Ganz im revolutionären Geist des Jubilars. In diesem Podcast stellen wir die Künstler vor. Be Beethoven, Folge 4.
My name is Matthias Halvorsen and I play piano and some other things from time to time. Yeah, so I'm in my apartment in Reykjavik where I live with my girlfriend and my little son. So if there's a sound of a baby in the background, that is him having fun. I think I identify myself very much as a pianist, but I do some composing from time to time. Sometimes I stretch that definition a bit, but yeah, sometimes more or less composing. A lot of the things that I have written that are compositions are more like games for the audience or for the musicians. So they're very contrived. They're not very composed often. But I most of what I do is just playing the piano and doing things around that. Yeah, so I started playing the piano around the age 7. I think it was 7 or 8. And we just had a piano at home and I would always go there. I had this love for ragtime, so I would always play a lot of ragtime and listen to like ragtime recordings on my father's LP player. Yeah, and then I always did basically classical piano a lot. It's always been very much centered around the classical way of doing music, where you do the scores and you do your Bach and Mozart and those kind of things. Yeah, then I think it's the last few years where I have done a few projects where I feel the image of, or the picture of what I actually want to be doing is coming more and more into place. Yeah, it's been a lot of time the last year spent working with dancers and theater and musicians from other genres and artists who identify in a very different way to what they do than what you normally see in classical music. And so there has been this need or will, I don't know how to say this. I have felt very strong that there to, yeah, I don't know, this sentence I now I'm trying to find the best way to say that. No, last few years there's been a lot of my time has been devoted to more conceptual work, where you take an idea and you fuse it with music, or take the idea from the music and bring it together in a project where it's not only you as a pianist performing the piece on stage anymore, but it's more bringing to life certain ideas and questions surrounding what you normally do as a classical pianist. So trying to be more cohesive in the way that you approach the material.
I'm Íñigo Ginal Miranda. It's a bit of a long description, but bear with me. I'm a Spanish classical musician. I started my education as a pianist, and afterwards I did composition studies. And from there on, I started to be more and more involved with the world of theater. And I started moving away from the standard classical music or contemporary music concerts and formats, and I started exploring different formats and possibilities for concerts. So I'm a pianist slash composer slash performer. Sometimes I work in theater slash stage director slash slash. My brother wanted a piano. My brother is older than me, he's 3 years older than me, and he was impossible as a child. So he wanted to play piano, and my parents said no, and then I guess he just screamed through a whole year, and then they bought us a piano, and so because he had a piano, I had to study piano. And it's, you know, it's always kind of like the way it works in life. They bought it for him, and then I ended up actually just loving it. They bought it when he was six, so it means I was playing around when I was three. I can't say when, but pretty early on. I have horrible music written from when I was like 9 and 10, and it's very sweet, but it's horrible. I don't know what the role of a composer is nowadays. I just try to make something that makes sense for me. I think it's very difficult because there's so many strands and so many different things going on in our society. You can, you know, follow all of these different paths. And so I just try to follow this one that looks appealing to me and where I feel kind of at home, which is this intersection of theater and music. But it's difficult to put your finger on what does it mean being a musician or being a classical musician or a classical composer nowadays, or even a composer and classical composer. I don't know what that is either. But I think a bit of honesty is probably always an integral part of, you know, just staying true to yourself.
A couple of years ago, I did a project with the Goldberg Variations where we would perform and record the Goldberg Variations live on different instruments in different settings. And the initial thought was to see how the music and the performance would change in the interaction with the instrument. Because when you play on a certain kind of piano, there are a lot of things that change, but you don't always talk very much, or it's not a very public thing in classical music that the instrument has that amount of power. But what we ended up doing in the project was basically doing three different recordings, where the first one was on an instrument that was extremely heavy. The keys were very, very heavy to play because it was an old Velte grand piano. And Velte is like a player piano. It plays itself, you know, from these old paper scrolls. So basically then the whole performance as I had prepared it before technically and everything went quite out the window because the piano was much, much heavier than what I could without any preparation time really adjust to. So what you get is then a recording where the element of struggle and the element of surprise is extremely much in the forefront. You don't get the image of the piece cleanly presented as you normally want, but you get a very... this element comes very much and disturbs that image. You know, the place, the piano, and the performer with not in control instead of being completely in control. That image kind of blurs together. And in the second recording, we went to a church in Norway and we did a concert recording live where we chose to do some pre-takes before the actual recording. And we basically just ran the piece twice. And then when we made the recording for that concert, Normally when you make a studio recording or a live recording of a classical concert, you will of course go in and cut out all the mistakes and cut out everything that you don't like and fix it, kind of. So we chose the opposite strategy and went in and found the mistakes and the interesting things that went wrong in the pre-takes and cut them into the live performance. And in the third recording, we went to a hospital and recorded the piece live in the foyer. Patients and the doctors would be walking just through while we were playing, some people sitting down, and you would see people in very strong situations and very, it's not a neutral place. It's a very emotional place, and it's filled with people in a very special state. So then we wanted to try to involve the performance of the piece as much into the place as we could. So we would put the piano, so I would have to look at everybody walking past. And the recording was made so that the sound of the piano blends with the sounds of the hospital. So you'll have a bed that's maybe been pushed through. You hear the wheels going like... You get this really special atmosphere that just blends in with the piece.
So the Ordnung der Dinge is an ensemble that I co-founded 7 years ago now. Yeah, 2018. So 7 years ago, maybe possibly even eight, I don't quite remember. I co-founded this ensemble with other actors / musicians. So we're a group of four or five people. The defining aspect of this ensemble is that the people in it are either musicians that have different capabilities or different abilities. For example, Mariel Price is in there. She plays saxophone for us, but she's also a visual artist. Vera Cardos, she plays violin for us. She's also a yoga teacher and she's also a dancer. She has like dance training. Katrin Ormeis, she's actually an actress from her education, but she can play cello and she plays cello for us. The defining aspect of the people of the ensemble is just that they can play music and they can also have some other kind of ability that we can use on a stage.
This turns them into weird, fascinating in-betweens that defy every expectation our audience might have about what a modern music performance is.
I guess we just have a taste for the unexpected.
And what we're committed as an ensemble is precisely to create and explore these in-between formats. Before I met the ensemble, what was so interesting to me, because I was already writing music for musicians on video, or for musicians that act, or musicians that have text to recite or something like that. And what I started seeing very clearly is that we couldn't create these different formats, we couldn't open up the formats if we didn't have the necessary people to do it. Like, if you want to do something different, sometimes it's not enough with you being or with you having a different idea, but you actually have to have the people that can make that idea true. Because sometimes you just can't. There's fantastic musicians that are just not gifted and they've never been trained to be on a stage. And so it doesn't matter if you have a wonderful idea, if you don't have a person that can realize it, it's going to look bad. I was going to say something else, but I'm going to go with it's going to look bad. So when I met these people at a theater production that I was myself playing in, then I was immediately very, I was very surprised to begin with, because I met lots of people all of a sudden that could do both, that could do stage work and that could do music, and I just didn't know there were such people. And then it turned out that we all had kind of this interest, and so we all came together to form this ensemble, mm-hmm. and we're still working on that.
Most of the time, we work on stage concerts, because although we might look odd, deep down, we have classical hearts and believe the concert is a beautiful idea, and gathering people to experience music together is something worth keeping and working on. But these concerts combine compositions, theatrical interludes, and visual art with wit, irony, and philosophic undertones.
The name of the ensemble comes from, it's a theater tradition that theater groups sometimes take the name of the first piece they worked in. So whatever they did first, that's the name of the group. And what we did first as a group is a piece that I wrote for three actors, sitting on tables and just really playing with lots of objects that they have on the table. And that piece itself is called the Ordnung der Dinge. And so the idea behind the name is that you can understand music, actually, not just weird music, for, you know, to say it like that, but also actual music, what we would say classical music, Handel and Mozart and Peronin and what have you. You can understand that as the art of harmony, as the art of ordering, you know, pitches, ordering scales, ordering rhythms, ordering instrument colors, ordering not in the sense of cleaning up, but in the sense of creating sense out of these mixes. And the Ordnung der Dinge is kind of the idea, or the attempt to take that further, to ordering, you know, making music out of objects, out of situations, out of texts, out of theatrical characters, just making music the art of harmony and order, and not necessarily just the art of sound or the art of sounding tones. I don't know why I ended up here, where I am. I don't know why I ended up performing and directing and composing and trying to do everything. I've always been very interested in everything, and that was always a problem. For me, it was a problem as a kid. I wanted to do everything. There's just no time for such a thing, and so I ended up doing music because I really like music. But somehow, these many different perspectives on things that are kind of there, you know, in the same area, that is something that's very appealing to me, and it's very appealing to my personality. Otherwise I get a little bit bored.
So the first part of my Beethoven project is a project with a Norwegian jazz drummer, Jan-Martin Gismavik. And this project explores very much what and how you, as a classical performer, when you go on stage to make music, how you relate to and use and what kind of a relationship you have with the score of the piece that you're supposed to be preparing. Most of my project for the Beethoven has a lot to do with, I mean, it's basically performances. So it's you go on stage and you play, but then we, in each different part of my project, I want to deal with and explore one question that is very central to how we do classical music.
Oh.
So in the first part, the question is very much centered around what it means to read a score. What's the relationship between the composer, the score, and then the performer that goes on stage? How much power do you take? How much power you give away? And how much responsibility you have? In the second part of the project, I do much less with the score, but I work very much on the instrument. And there, through changing the ways the piano work, we want to explore what it does to the music. So not changing the actual notes, but going in and changing the instrument. For instance, in one of the preparations, I've made a system for how to change the sound of the piano systematically so that when you play it in one key, it will have a different kind of sound than if you play it in another. And it's going to be gradual so that if you play a piece in C major, the more you modulate away from C major towards, let's say, F sharp major, the more and more different the sound will become. So that thought in that preparation is to bring to the piano an aspect of these tuning systems that they had back in Bach's time. For even though it was tempered, the piano, it still didn't mean that all the intervals were the same. So the relationship between the notes, the intervals would change and be different depending on which key you would play. So this is basically what I wanted to bring there, that one key sounds different than another. They don't all sound the same like they always do. And then in the next installment, the third one, there are several things that has to come in at once, but it's a lot about the aesthetic, what you think about as nice and pretty sound, how it's well balanced and those kind of things, to explore how it's possible to push that in other directions, and also to explore how to work in a group and a few other things.
So the first project we're going to do is B. Beethoven. We're still considering titles. And in any case, what it's going to be is a concert in four different spaces in a mansion in Esslingen. And we're also considering different festivals where this could be exported to. And the way it works is that we have a bit of a reduced public. I think it's 50 people or around 50 people. No, 60, sorry, 60. And they're split into four groups and they all visit these different rooms where they encounter a different audiovisual proposal with some piece being played and a certain kind of art, really visual art installation around it. And all these four different rooms speak to the theme of childhood. And so they relate to childhood in a different way. We've got a room for Unheimlichkeit, so uncanniness, I think. Geborgenheit, which I cannot translate into English, although I know what it means, because I looked it up, but only into Spanish. We've got another room that's game or spiel. And so in each and every one of these rooms, the audience is going to be confronted with a certain situation. So maybe it will be a concert lying down, or maybe it will be, for the Unheimlichkeit, a bit of a weird situation that you can't really make something out of. And in each of these rooms, there's a musical piece that's going to be played that has a relationship to this childhood theme. But the relation of the music and childhood is a little bit more abstract. Like, we don't use children's music or music intended for children, but more composers like Ravel or Bieber that had pieces that somehow related to these themes that we were thinking of. So it's kind of like a mix in between a concert and an art exhibition. I wouldn't say I'm particularly interested in specific subjects. I actually, funnily enough, I have found out sometimes I'm better when I'm given subjects. Because sometimes when I have to choose subjects, because like I said before, I'm so interested in many things and it's difficult for me to choose. And then when I get a subject, maybe some subjects don't interest me, but most of them, actually, I can find something interesting about them, and so it's better for me to work like that. I'm very, very interested in perception, and just everything about sound perception, but also visual perception, and that's why I also work a lot with audiovisual installations or audiovisual pieces where you mix the visual and the auditory, because that gives you a lot of possibilities when you want to create, for example, the concert we were talking about, you want to create certain rooms that evoke certain emotions or certain mind states, then you need to bring all these things together. I'm not very keen on any particular subject matter.
Wie Beethoven ist ein Projekt von Podium Esslingen im Rahmen des Beethoven-Jubiläums 2020. Das Projekt wird maßgeblich gefördert durch die Kulturstiftung des Bundes sowie vom Land Baden-Württemberg, der Baden-Württemberg-Stiftung und der L-Bank. Vielen Dank für die Interviews an Iñigo Miranda und Matthias Halforsen. Eine Produktion von 4000 Hertz Studio im Auftrag von Podium Esslingen.